This is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now as a cancer, I'm looking forward to seeing him at the Combine because, again, it's going to be interesting to see. But didn't expect this trade this fast. But Gary Klein from the L.A. Times. Gary, how stunned were you yesterday when you found out that this deal got agreed to, Marcus Peters coming to the Rams? I mean, this is a huge deal.
Really, really big deal for the Rams, who have going into this season, the Combine season, the pre-draft and everything else. Cornerback was an issue that they were definitely going to have to address, and to be able to acquire a frontline player like Marcus Peters before the new league year even begins, I think it's a huge coup for Les Snead and for Sean McVay and the Rams.
I mean, now I know we're all trying to figure out the draft choice compensation. How much of a price do you think that they've paid?
You know, I think it's going to be interesting to find out. The Rams have a number one pick this year, which they didn't have last year. I can't imagine that it's, for their first pick. But, I mean, this is a 25-year-old cornerback, a premium position, a guy who's caused more turnovers than anyone in the NFL at that position. It's just, to be able to bring him in. And certainly Marcus Peters comes with some baggage or at least some questions. But the Rams obviously feel confident that their locker room culture is going to be able to embrace him, and it just solves a huge piece of their off-season puzzle, not just in terms of personnel, but in terms of having a guy at $1.7 million at that position with some of the other issues they have to address with Aaron Donald and some others. It works for them on so many levels.
Oh, I know, and that's what I find so amazing about the deal is that, you talk about a guy being available at the perfect time, because I thought that, obviously, they made a mistake by letting Jackrabbit, Janoris Jenkins, go. He gets the $12 million a year contract, and then, of course, they had to overpay Trumaine Johnson for 2 years as a franchise player. Now they get Marcus Peters, who I think is better than both.
Yeah, I mean, arguably, you look at the production over those first three seasons, it's pretty remarkable. I think a lot of, like you, I just think a lot of teams in the NFL are kind of looking at this deal with the kind of jaw-dropping, because the Rams got better. And because he's going into his fourth season, they have the option to pick up that fifth-year option and keep him under control for another year at, $1.7 million, of course, is nothing to sneeze at, but really for a premium bargain basement price. And with the Aaron Donald situation coming up, Todd Gurley coming through, the year after, and Jared Goff, all these guys that are going to be really commanding some big salaries to get a premium corner under control is pretty prolific for the Rams.
How good do you think Trumaine Johnson was?
I think Trumaine Johnson, obviously that 2015 season when he intercepted seven passes or, playing opposite Janoris Jenkins, there were some questions about I don't even think there were questions. It was obvious a lot of those opportunities came because teams were thrown away from Janoris Jenkins. But I think Trumaine Johnson, while his production, never came close to matching that in the last two seasons when he was under the franchise tag, I think he was a solid corner. I don't think he was spectacular. He did have some opportunities for interceptions that he dropped, and I know that was very frustrating for him. But you know what? To play 2 years in the NFL and make close to $31 million and then be able to hit the free agent market, I don't think anyone's feeling really sorry for him, but I think that this deal for Marcus Peters, kind of sealed his fate with the Rams, because I think there was an outside chance that they would try to retain him. His turnaround, or not even turnaround, but his emergence as kind of a leader this last season and as a solid guy and a team captain, I think, with the uncertainty at the cornerback's position, the Rams might have been entertaining the thought of possibly bringing him back if the price was right, but I think this deal kind of seals his fate in terms of he's going to be off of the free agent market and get paid by someone else.
Oh, yeah, probably. I might imagine, you know, maybe Cleveland, and I don't know, maybe San Francisco will get in the mix there too. But, you know, one of those teams I think will be probably trying to grab him. But now I guess the other decision, and it kind of looks like, because when I heard the first notion that Sammy Watkins might get the franchise tag, I kind of cringed. And I don't know, maybe it was like being on the sideline and watching how they use Sammy as more of a decoy than a main threat. And I know he's got great deep speed and a very talented receiver, but, you know, it sounds like they may take LaMarcus Joyner, the safety, and put the franchise tag on him, and then maybe let Sammy Watkins walk.
That's a scenario. You know, I think you're right about, you know, the way they used him, but I think the Rams are also looking at it. If you know, when they're looking at how they might get this stuff done, I think in terms of Watkins, they feel like he got there late in training camp. He never really got acclimated, you know, to Jared Goff. Goff had been working with Robert Woods and Cooper Kupp, all those guys through the off season. So, you know, Watkins kind of came in behind the eight ball and never really was worked into the offense the way I think most people thought, maybe even the Rams envisioned. He still ended up, you know, with eight touchdown catches, the most of any Rams receiver. But I think the franchise thing, even though based on his production last year, he's certainly not a $16 million a year player, the Rams looked at it as like, okay, let's see if this guy can be healthy for the whole year. And he was. And I think now they're looking at it as like, okay, well, if we franchise him, we got another year to evaluate this. If he stays healthy and we can actually get him into the offense and make him a deep threat, then, you know, they can pull the trigger on a long-term deal. And if not, then he walks and, you know, they'll get some compensation for him. But on the defensive side, as you mentioned, LaMarcus Joyner is a guy that they feel like they have to be able to keep. And they want to get him signed to a long-term deal. They tried to do it before last season. His market value increased dramatically with the switch to safety and the way he played. So that's going to be an issue. But again, I think the Marcus Peters, you know, deal figures into all of that because it does give them, you know, room under the salary cap to be creative in terms of how they want to structure, you know, all these players.
How's it coming on the Aaron Donald negotiations?
Well, you know, let me say this. You've been in the business long enough and worked with agents or, you know, tried to communicate with agents, and some of them are very, you know, they're not shy about communicating with reporters, and others play it much closer to the vest. I think the Aaron Donald situation is something that, like Joyner, you know, I think his price has only gone up as the season went on, and he ends up as the NFL Defensive Player of the Year. The Rams have talked about wanting to get that deal done. They think he should be, you know, one of the highest paid players or the highest paid player. But, you know, the market, with the way things are going, it just strikes me that Aaron Donald and his representatives went into last season not only wanting to be the highest paid defensive player, but really kind of setting a new benchmark. And I think now, because now we're in the off season and you've got players like Khalil Mack and, you know, coming up for pop renewal with the Raiders, I think there's now a waiting game maybe on both sides to see what happens with that deal and which one of those two guys is going to sign first so that the other guy can eclipse that deal. But I think there's motivation on the Rams' part to get it done. I couldn't tell you definitively that they're close or they're far. It just strikes me that at this point it's still a waiting game. And Aaron Donald showed last year that he didn't even have to be in training camp to have a productive year. The thing about that strategy is now if he sat out this training camp and missed some time, I think it would affect his movement towards eventual free agency. So that's something, I guess, a long-winded way of saying the Rams seem motivated to get it done. It's just going to be interesting to see how high that number is.
Oh, no question. Now, you got to figure that one of these deals, whether it's going to be Khalil Mack or Aaron Donald, is going to top 20.
Well, yeah, I mean, just kind of the buzz you hear from people who've been in the league and around the league a lot longer than I have. You know, if you look at some of the numbers that, and not that these guys are quarterbacks by any means, and Aaron Donald's kind of, you know, it's an interesting situation because he's not that he's not that edge rusher, but he's such a disruptive force that he really is kind of changing, I think, you know, the way that that position, at least the way he plays it, is looked at. And, you know, agents and these players, they don't want to be left behind as the salaries climb for quarterbacks and other, you know, difference-making positions. They don't want to be left behind. But you go back to the collective bargaining agreement and the way these things are structured, you know, if the Rams really wanted to play hardball, you know, they have him under control for next season, which is going to be his fifth year, and they could franchise him the next 2 years. So it's just going to be from a, you know, a subtext kind of thing to monitor. It's going to be really interesting to see how this plays out.
No, it really is. I mean, that's what the interesting time is. And are you looking forward to getting to the combine?
You know, I am, John. You, I know, were there have years and for years and years and years when it was a much more quaint affair.
Mm-hmm.
And some people I know complain that it's gotten too big. And it's, but you know what? For me, to be able to get down there, it's not so much seeing these new players coming that are coming out, because we don't even really get to see them work out and whatnot. But to be able to talk with the GMs and the coaches and get to you know, interact with some of these players who might end up you know, with the organization you cover, I find it you know, it like a convention. There's lots of great stuff to take from it, and I don't want to be down there for the whole week. I'm only going to probably be down there for 4 or 5 days. But I am looking forward to it.
Yeah, no, I love it. I mean, I've been going since 1990, and every year. And, of course, it gets wilder and crazier every year. Hey, Gary, thanks so much for joining us, and I'll see you there probably by Tuesday.
Looking forward to it, John. See you there.
Okay, Gary Klein, L.A. Times, a big trade. Marcus Peters going to the Oakland Raiders. Want to get your thoughts? All right, we're going to the Los Angeles Rams. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Yeah, kind of getting scary how the Rams and the 49ers are kind of ramping up right now, because you can see that Marcus Peters move is going to be one. And, of course, how they get their team together after some of the other offseason moves. You know, again, they've got big decisions to make, maybe not as big as some of the Seattle decisions, because what you're looking at for the Rams are kind of like in the beginning of their run, where the Seahawks are trying to reload for their run. And so I think that makes for some interesting battles and things of that nature. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. How much right now, where would you put the Seahawks in relationship to some of these other teams in the division? Because, again, it's like, you know, Seattle did finish second. They still have a very good team. You know that, you know, a lot of proud guys on this team are still going to be around. A lot of Pro Bowl players still going to be around. But where do you kind of fit into the whole equation? Give us a call. I mean, how much fear do you have of the Rams? Do you have fear of the San Francisco 49ers, or do you think they're more of a team that's a year or two away from being able to do it? 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Yeah, I like what they're doing. I like the moves that they made. I like the hiring of Sean McVay. Certainly, I think he's put together a good coaching staff. Yes, it probably does hurt that they've lost a couple key coaches on the offensive side of the ball, but they still have Sean McVay. They still had Wade Phillips, and now they have Marcus Peters. They still have Aaron Donald. A lot of good things right now going on with this team, and you know, you're just going to see, are they going to slip a little bit? But, boy, they're now better in the secondary now that they were able to make that move and get Marcus Peters. I mean, hey, listen, Trumaine Johnson's a good player. Marcus Peters is a great player. And so to get a great player like that, to go with a guy you know, as good as they have it, I mean, this and Aaron Donald, wow. Time is going to be good. Now it's going to be interesting to see if they have to make some further adjustments on the defense, that they have to let some guys go. Yeah, they're letting Trumaine Johnson go, but they still get better at the quarterback position like that. Who do we have, Ashley? Oh, let's go to Commando Dave. David, how are you?
Hey, what's up, John Clayton? Doing great. Just trying to get through spring training, the rest of the NBA, March Madness, 162 games of baseball, and all the Tiger Woods comeback attempts for football season to start. You know what I'm saying?
I know. But, of course, the great part is football stays year-round.
That's the beauty of it. And right out of the chute, John Clayton, let me give a shout-out to my hometown, Tacoma. Because before he was a Laker or a Cav or a Celtic or a Sun or a King or even a Husky getting his jersey retired in the rafters of Heck Ed Pavilion, Isaiah Thomas was a T-towner out of Curtis High School. So congratulations to a deserving dog.
Yeah, I thought that I just feel so bad for him, what's happened to him this season. He has the hip injury. Then of course he gets traded twice, and he's not going to stay with the Lakers long. But it was a great night last week when he was able to be honored and have that number retired.
Yeah, I agree with you. And speaking of deserving John Clayton, for anyone who didn't see it, the specially designed Keith Jackson Award banner is still on JohnClaytonDammit.com with a picture that looks like you're getting tackled by Ziggy Marley or Richard Sherman. Can only see dreadlocks, but let me make this important point, John Clayton. As the professor of the NFL, I think it's your duty to notify Roger Goodell of the banner so he can study the textbook hug before the NFL draft. Let's face it, if the rules committee is spending hours looking at footage of improper tackling technique, then the commissioner of the NFL can look at JohnClaytonDammit.com for hours to work on his improper hug technique. Of course, the banner commemorates the 2018 Keith Jackson Award, excellence in communicating sports stories in Washington State, but John Clayton, as it turns out, it's an excellent example that a good tackle starts with a good hug. In the photo, it's clear Richard Sherman is leading with his shoulder. Then there's good space in between your head, so no helmet-to-helmet contact, is happening. Most importantly, your belts are to the side and not directly lined up like the hugs each rookie endures from RG0 on draft day. The league just doesn't need hashtags.
It's all about the technique.
Getting started.
It's all about technique.
Huh?
It's all about technique.
This is what I'm trying to say here. Look, the NFL has enough issues on the docket on the offseason, and one of the biggest, I think, can be solved by sending everyone to spring training, because when you watch baseball players, John Clayton, they're either hitting or playing catch, right?
Right.
If the ball goes in the glove, it's a catch. When it hits the ground, it's a drop. Case closed, as far as I'm concerned. But how do you see this thing being resolved before next season with this catch thing that they just got to get a handle on?
They need to just make it simple. They just have to stop. Like, for example, ball in hand, foot on ground, and then they always say and. No, take away the and. It's like, okay, lean toward the side of the offense. I mean, certainly, you want more offense, and there was more defense in the game. And it's like they keep on screwing this up by trying to put some phrase that's supposed to explain. No, if the ball's in the hand and the foot on the ground, it's a catch.
That's what I'm saying. Just like in baseball, if the ball hits the ground, you didn't catch the ball. Look, the other issues I see, John Clayton, are player protests, domestic violence, recreational cannabis, medical cannabis, and stupid end zone celebrations. In your estimation, John Clayton, in which order do you think the league prioritizes and acts on those issues?
Well, I mean, domestic has to be right up at the top because, again, you can't tolerate that. I like the end zone celebrations. Sure, they may get a little bit excessive, so that one, for me, is off the table.
That's stupid.
Let's put it this way. So much better than it was. You'd rather see flags for celebrations, or would you rather see the celebrations? Just have the celebrations go. I like that. So I'm okay on that one. They've got to clean up some of the stuff on the coaches that are involved in the Super Bowl. I mean, that's just become a total mess. I think that they've got to clean up some of the stuff as far as the replay. Replay became overzealous. I mean, there's too much of the calls coming from New York. That's got to stop.
I read in Bleacher Report that because of the league's inability to get a handle on domestic violence, that smoking cannabis isn't as big of a deal as it was in the past and therefore doesn't affect draft status as it did before. Is that true?
Well, we'll see, because, again, what happens is that you're making a judgment on a player, not necessarily that he smokes or doesn't smoke, but the thing, if you smoke before the combine, then you're dumb. because again, you're gonna be tested, and so if you know you're gonna be tested, and so all of a sudden, you know, they're not judging the fact that he smoked; that he's judging the judgment of smoking before the combine. That plays a big factor in it, and it will affect a player.
And lastly, John Clayton, you said acquiring Marcus Peters was a big move for the Rams. I just heard a nice interview with your guy from L.A., but I look at it as more of a shaky move because, for as long as I've been watching football, and let me throw this in for free, I'm a Marcus Peters fan. I mean, he's a cold-blooded DB and a Husky, but I've never seen a player at any level, especially the NFL, pick up a yellow flag and hurl it into the stands. But it was at that very moment I saw what Coach Peterson of the Huskies saw when he first got here, and one of his first moves was to kick him off the team. I agree with you. He is a great player, but that guy is one of the hardest of the hard heads. And are you sure that L.A. is the type of environment that his particular type of talent can get corralled and continue to be a great player?
I think so. I mean, I don't know. Maybe I like him. You being a defensive back, I just like the talent.
I love him.
Yeah. I mean,
I just don't like his antics.
Yeah. Well, that obviously has to clean up. I mean, they've got to fix that because, again, you know, he's hurting himself more so than anything else.
Right. Yeah, because it was a shock, of course, when Coach Peterson got here, and one of the first things he did was kick him off the team, and everyone was tripping, me included. But as it's kind of played out, and we've seen him, you know, as he's been in the NFL, okay, we can see some of the hard-headedness. But, again, when you get to the level of you're picking up an official's flag and throwing it into the stands, you're just out of control as a player.
Well, that was bad, but the thing that was worse was when he went into the locker room thinking he was ejected, and he wasn't. He was missing for his teammates, and they needed him. That one was bad. Hey, Commando, thank you for
always
the call.
Always good talking to you, John Clayton. Thank you.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Jack. Hey, Jack, how are you?
Hey, Professor. It's nice to talk to you.
Good talking to you.
I just wanted to address your question about where we stand in the division right now.
Yeah.
I think that it's a really important time for Pete Carroll and John Schneider to make business moves now. I think it's imperative to sign Richardson over Bennett. I just think Bennett lost a step, and he's just not as good as Richardson is now.
Mm-hmm. Because again, you've got a 5-year difference right now with Richardson versus Bennett.
Yeah. You know, I think finding a trade partner, if you can get a good trade for Earl Thomas, who's in the last year of his contract, I think that would be a good move. You know, try to get trade capital for this deep draft and stop, you know, I think it's less about being loyal to those players who help you win a championship as it is to, you know, moving forward, making those sort of Patriot-like business decisions.
Mm-hmm. But you kind of get the idea. Ian Rappaport put it out that they think they're not going to franchise Sheldon Richardson, and if that's the case, then that would mean that they'd be keeping Bennett. And so you can understand one premise of that is that you're now weaker at defensive end, where you still have options at defensive tackle. I mean, one thing I think that needed to be done last year that didn't get done was if you're keeping Bennett, you got to cut down the number of plays. You can't have him out there 80-some plays, 80% of the time. That's too much.
What's McDowell's condition? Is he coming back?
I wouldn't count on it.
Oh, man. Well, then, do you think we're in a good position right now at 18 in the draft to be able to hopefully to move down and get, you know, a good price for that pick?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, when you think what did they get, like a 3, 5, 6, and 7, you know, moving down from 26. I mean, what they need is somebody in the second round that wants Lamar Jackson, because somebody will jump up and maybe give that second round pick that could fill the void, that extra second or whatever. So I think that, you know, they're still in a good spot to make a trade. I still think that they can do it, but they've got to get picks in the second and third round. Hey, Jack, thank you for the phone call.
All right, thanks a lot.
All right, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. This is the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Reese in Tacoma. Hey, Reese.
Hey, good morning, John. Thanks for taking my call.
Oh, thank you for calling.
One of the things that I'm real curious about, and I'd like your perspective on it, season of change, obviously, for the Seahawks. I'm not a betting person because usually when I do, I'd lose my shirt, if not my house. If I had to peg the NFC West, the upcoming season, I would put the Rams number one. I would put the Niners number two. I put Seattle number three, and I would put the Cardinals at number four. And the second part of my question is, I'd like your comment on both. The strength of the Seahawks is their defense, but they're a little bit long of the tooth age-wise there. Strength of the Mariners' offense is a little bit long in the tooth. So I guess my long-winded question is, are both the Seahawks and the Mariners, in your professional opinion, playoff teams in the upcoming season? And I will take your call off the air. Thanks, John.
Yeah, back in fact, you bring it up, and it's an interesting point that in some ways you can say that they kind of parallel, because I think that they're both wild card type teams, you know, because again, it's still going to be a battle with the pitching to see if the Mariners can get to 84, 85 wins. I kind of, you know, put them right now between 78 and 84, but then if things go right, they can increase because they do have a very good lineup. And in the case of the Seahawks, you know, I'm not ready to put San Francisco there yet, because again, I know that they won five straight games with Jimmy Garoppolo, but also remember that they've got a lot of building that they need to do on their defense and their offense. And so I tend to think it's going to be more the other, in the sense that, you know, I think both teams can be wild cards, but I would have San Francisco as being the third place team in this division. So, you know, that's I just look at it from the standpoint that this is still a good team. It's not a great team. I still think offensively they can be pretty good and get a, you know, a dynamic type of offense going. And then if they can have a defense that can hold teams to 18 points like they did last year, you know, it's, or they got 20 points last year. If they can get it back down to 18, then I think they can be okay. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Victor in Auburn. Hey, Victor, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing great, John. Another great show.
By the way, I almost did. I got a late call yesterday to do Moving the Chains, but I could not do it. So that would have been one where I would have had a chance to be on.
Yeah, I tuned in at 2:05. I heard another hump song there.
Yeah, well, what happened is that I got a call like at about 9 o'clock, and I had too many things scheduled for the afternoon, particularly with my wife.
Yeah, I know. Hey, quick question.
Yeah.
John, what do you think Denver's going to do with Cody Latimer? I know he hasn't lived up to the potential in the merger with the Heckman special teams player, but I know they're going to be weak on hard receivers, so they have one of the.
Yeah, I mean, it's just because it sounds like they're going to keep both receivers. I mean, there was the thought that Emmanuel Sanders and Demetrius Thomas was going to be let go, but now it looks like they're going to keep them both, and I think it's going to be hard to try to keep Latimer. I mean, again, I mean, what's his value? $1 million, $2 million? He never did anything in his time with the Denver Broncos. If he doesn't have a market, yeah, they might bring him back, but I don't think he's a big priority for him right now. Do you?
Yeah.
Okay, move closer to your phone because we can just barely hear you.
I'm sorry, John. You know what? I'll call him next week. Take care, buddy.
All right. Hey, thank you very much. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Yeah, the Broncos are going to be one of the more interesting teams to follow because they've got so many big decisions to make. They've got to get the quarterback position right, and then you got to kind of see what's going on in the AFC West. You know, can John Gruden bring the Raiders back to 10 wins? You know, is Kansas City downsizing because now they've got rid of Marcus Peters, they've got rid of Alex Smith, you know, so they're not going to be the same type of team. You know, they're not going to be as good. They're going to go with a young quarterback in Patrick Mahomes, but is that going to be good enough? So I think that's the look of where they're going to go. And so it's an interesting division. Just like the NFC West is an interesting division because, again, there's so much that's geared up with the improvements of both the Rams and the 49ers, and we just don't know where it stands right now with the Arizona Cardinals until they find out their quarterbacks. So give us a call at 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Yeah, it's getting close right now with the combine coming up and, you know, moves being done. That's what the great part is. I mean, you get on a Friday afternoon and all of a sudden you see a blockbuster trade like Marcus Peters and you go, whoa, look at that. absolutely fantastic to see that that type of power and that type of thing can happen on a Friday, and it's going to happen all next week because, again, you have every team together, every agent together, everybody's going to be there at the Combine. And, of course, we'll get there, start broadcasting on Wednesday, and the Saturday show, of course, will be from the Combine. Looking forward to that. So all those things are going to be in the mix, and, of course, chance to catch up with Pete Carroll, chance to catch up with John Snyder. Those will be on the agenda. Maybe chance to see what we can find out from the Rams and from the 49ers. Those things are going to be good. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. You know, 1990 was the first time I went to the Combine, and it just keeps getting better. It was still weird back then, though, because after about 2-3 years, when the media started showing up more and more, they kind of just didn't want us there. I mean, the league was fine on it, but it was like the people from the National Scouting Service, they did not want us there. And so we would be in the hall, they would take the chairs out of the lobby, and they would do all these different things. And so, finally, we're now all embraced, and now you got like 1,000 people showing up for the Combine. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Ashley, who do we have? Who's that again?
We got Reed from Edmond.
Oh, let's go to Reed from Edmond. Hey, Reed.
Hey, John. Thanks for the call. Just a question about backup quarterbacks in the NFL this past season. It seemed like, a couple backups were being used, and then when a backup came in, sort of teams were really running, trying to find other quarterbacks to help. Why didn't people have more trust with backup quarterbacks?
Because it's funny because, I mean, there was like 9 teams in each of the last couple of years that would go in with a quarterback as a backup that had absolutely no experience. I mean, this team did it with Trevon Boykin. And so, it's just that, they've downsized the position. And now you can see there's a great value to it because, the Eagles won a Super Bowl thanks to a backup quarterback, and the Minnesota Vikings went to the NFC Championship game with a backup quarterback. Because, again, with the salary cap, particularly with quarterback salaries going up, backup salaries were coming down. $5.5 million a year, Nick Foles was the highest paid backup. You had maybe 3 guys over $3 million a year. I mean, it just went downsized that much. So you save on one position, you save on the fullback position, and you save on backup. But if you get your quarterback hurt, hey, where's that savings? I mean, take a look what they did in Green Bay with Aaron Rodgers. They did not have a good backup quarterback. They paid the price and didn't make the playoffs. So, yeah, there's a value to it. But, again, teams right now have taken the position that they're not going to invest much in it. We'll see if this changes. But, again, the other problem is they're not developing enough good backup quarterbacks. I mean, so much of this league survived on the backup quarterbacks that were developed in the 2005 draft. The guys like Matt Cassel, Ryan Fitzpatrick. I mean, you go through a list, there was about 7 backup quarterbacks. They were all still in this league. A couple of them are still around, but, this league has done a horrible job of developing backup quarterbacks because what happens is if your starter is there, you draft a quarterback and he doesn't play for 4 years, then you don't know what you have. So they've got to find a better way of doing it. That's why they need a developmental league. That's why they need to find ways to get quarterbacks on the field, not necessarily at the expense of a starting player, but get games in their system. Hey, thank you for the phone call. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
Our thanks to Ashley Cox. Great being with you the last 2 weeks for producing and running the show. Matt Nelson will be back next week. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to John in Ballard. Hey, John.
Hey, Professor. Another great show.
Oh, thank you.
I'd like to go back to a call we had a couple calls ago when he asked you about Sheldon Richardson and his thoughts on the Seahawks. I really hope, John, that they re-sign Sheldon Richardson because I think the team needs him. Mm-hmm. I could see the team letting go of Michael Bennett. I don't have a problem with that. And I could also see the team trading Earl Thomas and getting a draft capital, as the caller said before. I mean, one of the things that stands out with a great general manager like a Branch Rickey or a Red Auerbach or Jerry West is that they know when to move on. And this is a young man's game, John, and you state that all the time on your show. I think the Seahawks should let go of some of these guys and get as much young players as they can and rebuild that defense. And I want to get your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, the question is that how much is too much? Because if you let too much go, then you're not going to be very good. Because, like you, you know, for example, if you take too much out of the pass rush, I mean, you know, where you used to count on Cliff Averill for 11 sacks and maybe Michael Bennett for 6 to 8 to 9 sacks, now you're taking almost half your sack total away. And I like Sheldon Richardson too, but again, something has to give. And right now, I think the switch is starting to go that, you know, it might be Sheldon Richardson the one to leave and Michael Bennett being able to stay. Because, you know, they're about $2.6 million under the cap right now. And, you know, they have to, they'll obviously get 13 or so by cutting Jeremy Lane and Cliff Averill and that. But we'll see. I mean, again, you wonder, it's like, is it better served to kind of break it down and get young? Because remember, the one problem you have in this draft, there's not a lot of pass rushers. It's not a great pass rusher draft. And so you may not be able to get the equal of what you're giving up. And you do have, you know, two good young defensive tackles, Nasir Jones and Jared Reed. And if you do keep Michael Bennett, I mean, he does play defensive tackle more than he plays defensive end. So it's an interesting dilemma that they have.
John, real quick, if they traded like Earl Thomas, as you said, maybe the Dallas Cowboys, couldn't they, in return, ideally get a first, a third round pick?
No.
And then you mentioned your program,
I don't think they can. I can't see Dallas giving up that much. I mean, I think it's going to be the equivalent of a first round pick. And what I mean equivalent, it could be like a second and a fifth, something like that. Because, you know, it is tough to be able to get. Again, we don't even know what the Marcus Peters deal is yet. That's still there. You have to figure they must have a first in there somehow, some way. But, you know, interesting dilemma that they have.
Okay, great show, John. Take care.
Hey, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Bob in Idaho. Hey, Bob.
John, a comment and then a quick question. The comment is, I'm not arguing with your analysis of Peter's athletic abilities, but I wouldn't touch a player that had failed with the Chris Peterson and Andy Reid.
Mm-hmm.
Just an observation.
It's a valid point.
So my question to you, it's a little unfair, but you're all of a sudden the general manager of the Seahawks. What's your top five priority moves right now?
Right now is find a running back. Again, and this wouldn't be the order of draft. See, I put, if it's going to be an order, I think the pass rushing defensive end is going to be the biggest priority. Then you have to put running back. Then you would go maybe offensive line, strong side linebacker, and then would probably, you know, because again, you have to have one offensive line, and then, you know, maybe a fullback.
Then your top three people you'd retain as free agents?
I would retain Bradley McDougal, because I think that you can get him at a good price. Luke Wilson, Sheldon Richardson. But again, I think I'm going to be on the outside in on that one. I think the Richardson thing isn't probably going to happen.
Is there a chance for them just to go ahead and try to trade him?
Well, you'd have to franchise him first and then try to trade him, because remember, you know, you don't have him after March 14th. Once he hits free agency, he's gone.
Yeah, but anybody that signs him is going to give up at least a third. So
there'll be a third next year, yeah.
Yeah, so, we'll see.
It's a tough one, because again, what's the right thing? Do you want to get younger? You want to get older? But getting younger, you may not be getting better. That's one of the issues that they have.
Well, my first priority is Earl Thomas.
Uh-huh. Trying to get a long-term deal?
Yep.
Yeah. Now the question is he going to be content getting a long-term deal at like $13.5, $14 million? He may want much more than that.
Well, yeah, I mean, it always turns out to be price.
Right.
But if he's reasonable, he's worth a reasonable level salary. I mean, he wants $14-15 million. Well, no, you got to let him do his thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's where I think they could get into a little bit of a problem, because I do sense that he may, you know, not want to just be the highest paid safety. He may want more than that. And if that's going to be the case, that could be very difficult. I mean, listen, he's a potential Hall of Fame player. That's how good he is. So you definitely don't want to lose him. But again, you know, you got to get value and you got to make some moves. I mean, sacrifices have to be made. It's just a matter, do you sacrifice a little younger or sacrifice a little older? Those are the decisions you have to come in there. Hey, thank you for the phone call. Let's go to Ron in Vancouver. Hey, Ron.
Ron.
Yes.
Thanks for taking my call. How are you guys doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. I know it's been a while, but I want to congratulate you guys in Seattle for getting a hockey team.
Oh, isn't that great?
Isn't that great?
Well, yeah. We just got to get 10,000 tickets sold, and once or season tickets sold, which I think will happen, and I think everything should be great in that regard.
Yeah, it's going to be a great rivalry with Vancouver Canucks coming down. You're going to have another great rivalry when the Toronto Maple Leafs, the Montreal Canadiens, come to town.
Mm-hmm.
We know what it's like when the Blue Jays come to Safeco Field.
Right.
Play the Mariners. Get used to it.
Mm-hmm.
Because when the Leafs are in town, the Canadiens and the Canucks, all the Canadians are coming down.
Yeah, this is going to be fun. I mean, it's kind of a nice bonus because, again, we didn't know if it was going to happen this quickly, but the fact that it's happening, I think, is just going to be great for this area.
I hear the deposit, like you mentioned earlier, is coming up probably March 1st or so. So like
start
you said,
then, yes.
Rally around it down there. And, yeah, we would love to see it happening. And the Key Arena, it looks like they're going to do a bang-up job redoing it. From the pictures I'm seeing, it's looking marvelous.
All very positive.
Yeah. And when you get a chance to see games in Las Vegas on the TV or somehow, look what they're doing.
Yeah.
This team, the Golden Knights, unbelievably to all hockey fans, is going to make the playoffs. And who knows how far they could go.
Well, that's the great part because, I mean, you saw how they set it up so that they set up that you can actually get a respectable team because, you know, they let more go from, you know, the teams that were existing than, and become available than I think any sport has done.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it's going to be fun, and I'm looking forward to it, so that should be great. Hey, Ron, thank you for the phone call.
Thanks, John.
We might have time for a quick one here because I know Mariner Baseball is just around the corner, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. But again, we head out on Tuesday to get to Indianapolis. That should be a good thing because, again, it's going to be fun at the Combine. A lot of interesting things to keep following. And again, looking forward to having on the show Pete Carroll, John Snyder. That should, my guess, I don't know 100%, but it looks like that probably should be Thursday and Friday. We'll see how many other guests we're going to be able to line up because, again, everybody's going to be there in Indianapolis. I hope that we can link up with everything. And, of course, it's going to be an interesting week, interesting day today because you've got Husky basketball going against Cal in a big game. That's going to be critical. And so going to be all kind of good things. And, of course, good things coming up. The Mariners coming up. They're taking on the Chicago White Sox in Game 2 of spring training. Stay tuned for that. That's just around the corner. And we'll be back at 10 o'clock on Monday. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.